the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. This is Nima Vedati. I'm out here in Central Texas. This week, we're going to be having the Texas Bitcoin Conference on Wednesday and Thursday.
Coinference.
The Bitcoinference. See, and then you can just make it two words. I say we do that. Let's petition the government for a redress of our grievance of the naming of the Bitcoin Coinference. All right, folks. Anyway, we've got Michael W. Dean.
And we do want to say hi to our fans listening in KIXZ in Amarillo. They could come down easily. It's about a 7-hour drive. They could come down to Austin and go to
that. Yeah, 7 hours. Exactly. Yes, yeah. It's in the same state, but it's as far as if you were driving across three or four states in the east.
Yeah, and the website is, Texas Bitcoin Conference, or you could just Google that. It's a long one.
Just Google it.
Google it corrects my spelling.
Speaking of Bitcoin, we've got the other half of our top men duo who've been harassed by the TSA for their Bitcoin. We've got Bill Buppert, the amazing Bill Buppert, on the show with us. Can you hear us, Bill?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, you're kind of cutting out. Should we have him call in on the phone? I think we should try it.
Sure.
Because it's cutting in and out. I'm going to send you his phone number. And so Nima, let's talk a little bit about Bill and about what we're going to talk about while we get Bill on the air. What do you think of that?
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll work for me. Yes. Yeah. That's why we have a board op, so you can do stuff like that while we fill time.
Yeah. So Nima.
But it won't just be filler. It'll be interesting. Bill's a good guy. Tell everybody about Bill.
Well, let's talk about the TSA, about Davi getting boinged and why we're having Bill on today.
Yeah. Boinged with the G, not with the K. Boinged. Yeah. Yes. It's not boinged. It's just boinged.
Yeah. There's actually, there's something called a nerd merit badge. You can get I've been boinged. And they also, I think they're making Namecoin ones. And it's one of our perks on the fundraiser for the Indiegogo is a nerd merit badge that says Namecoin. Yeah.
Yeah. Nerd merit
for
badges.
Free speech.
Kind of awesome.
At freespeech.me.
They're digital merit badges, though, right?
No, they're like Boy Scout sew on merit badges.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, no, it's not.
They should be like symbols you attach to your internet names.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So boinged them, and read some of the comments of the state apologist saying that Davi and Bill were wrong for poking verbally at the TSA rapists, and these people are rapists. They will do unspeakable things to your wife or child or grandmother in front of you, and you were powerless to do anything about it. I call that rapists. I don't care if anybody says that's un-American. You're treasonous. You're calling those fine people hired off a pizza box murderers. I mean, no, they're rapists. The murderers are the other
ones. Those ones are rapists. Yeah. Yes, there are other murderers in the government, but those guys are rapists.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, man. So people, for some reason, defend their state, their slave masters. And I don't know why. I guess it goes back to Stockholm syndrome. But you get a lot of this in Boing Boing's comments. I don't know why, Michael. I kind of expected more from Boing Boing readers.
Well, there's a whole thing in tech, which is kind of weird, because a lot of people in tech do things open source, free software, like Linux. Linux is a perfect example of you don't need the government and you don't even need central planning. Like Linux kind of evolved over, you know, a few years out of a couple lines of code of GNU code, GNU/Linux, Richard Stallman would correct us on that, to like this massive world-changing thing that like not that many people use.
Back, his connection sounded better.
Okay, not many people use Linux on their home computer, but it runs the internet. Like anytime you search a web page, it's going through Linux servers somewhere because they don't have to pay Microsoft for a license. Yep. And that thing is proof that you don't need central planning. There are three people who originally invented Linux, and then thousands who contributed to it. Of the three who invented it, one of them is like a good gun guy and a, you know, kind of ANCAP, I don't need government guy. That's Eric S. Raymond. And the other two, Linux Torvalds, he's like a typical European Scandinavian socialist. Yeah. But, you know, Richard Stallman like is an out and out socialist. He says, I'm a socialist, you know. So I don't understand how this thing in tech of like people hold in their pocket the power to – and Bitcoin is proof of this. Like Bitcoin and Namecoin and the blockchain can replace every so-called service the government does of like land title deeds, ownership, original authorship, and prove it, and publicly in a way that, like, couldn't be faked. You could even fake, like, you could break, you know, someone could break into the city hall and, like, put a different document in and say someone else had the deed on something, but you can't do that. And these nerds, these lovable nerds, I'm a nerd, these nerds, like, have the power in their pocket on their phone to, like, replace the government, and they're still defending the government. Do we have Bill
on? You know why? Because the this thing you say, the blockchain can replace every legitimate service, government service. Well, that's true of every legitimate service, the services that the governments do that people want. It's not true of the awful services, quote, services the government does to people.
Yeah, like
quote, law enforcement.
Raping your daughter in front of you.
The TSA, foreign wars, the military-industrial complex. Those are things that couldn't exist in a world run by the blockchain.
I feel sorry for my mailman. I really like my mailman. He's a nice guy. I chat up with him. And more, like, I see him trudging through the snow and 50-mile-an-hour winds to come up to my house and put junk mail. And that just goes back – that's all the mail I get now. Like, everything else is done electronically or by FedEx or UPS. And it's like – that guy's job exists, paid for by stolen money, to pay him a good wage to do something he probably doesn't want to do, to deliver something to me that I don't want. You know, that's the government. Yes, so, Bill, what do you think, Bill? You were there when the TSA molested Davi's Bitcoin. What happened?
I was. Let me add one illustration of what you were just talking about, Michael, and that's yesterday we were in Tucson, Arizona, where there was a torrential downpour. And of course, we go in front of a government building, and what's happening during the torrential downpour? All the sprinklers are on, watering the lawn.
Awesome. This is Bill. Yes. We're talking to Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com. Is it .com?
It's .com.
It will be .bit. I've got ZeroGov.bit held for you when you want it.
In front of the Tucson government building, were there also a bunch of signs and literature about how the horrible drought was causing everybody to not use their sprinklers?
Wow!
Now, were you in town yesterday, Davi? Too? I mean, Nima?
How do you know about that?
I just assume.
Yeah, your assumption's correct.
Yep, you sound really good. You on a telephone there, Bill?
I'm on Skype.
Oh, excellent! We got it working. So, Bill was with Davi yesterday. We had Davi on. Davi, this is actually being really good for Davi's career as a Liberty yakker. And Bill was there to witness it, you know, and anybody who there's some of these comments at Boing Boing are like, maybe this guy, Davi, just made this up. But you were there. He didn't make it up. It happened, right?
He didn't make it up at all. He and I just so happened to run into each other on the same flight that we were taking to Chicago. And we met up and I was waiting for 10 minutes because I always pack a gun whenever I air travel across these United States. So I had to wait 10 minutes in the area for my gun to pass muster. And then he and I met up, and then we went up there to go through the gate rape.
Gate rape. That's a good one, man. Did you make that up? That's funny.
I did not, but remember, with TSA, one man's junk is another man's treasure.
Now, that's great. Is that original? I haven't heard that one yet.
That's original. You know, closing the barn door since 2001. TSA just makes me sick to my stomach.
And you you worked for the U.S. military. You are a retired Army officer. Is that correct? What was your rank?
Indeed, I am. And I retired as a captain because I was prior service enlisted.
Yeah. So, man, what did these people do? We heard the long the version of it yesterday from Davi. Give us the short version. And you heard Davi, right? Give us any new information he missed.
I'm just going to give you the short version, which is that I was in front of Davi. He and I both opted out of the porno scanner. We both stood on the yellow footsteps, and we were both together side by side. And I can't say it on radio what I tell the TSA
guy
not to touch.
You said, don't touch my Richard.
That's right. I said, don't touch my flashlight. Yeah. And I always say that because it leads to interesting conversations. Because they could say, well, I have to, and that leads to an interesting conversation. Well, or they say, I don't want to, and that leads to an interesting conversation.
That leads back to more of our definition of government here on the Freedom Fiends is one person doing something he doesn't want to do to another person that doesn't want it done to them.
Yes, yes.
That is so eloquent. It sounds almost Larkin Rose-like in its simplicity and eloquence.
So what did this guy who didn't want to do when you said, don't do what I don't want you to do and you don't want to do to my Richard?
He immediately went to a supervisor because he was very very nervous. He couldn't look me in the eye. He went to a supervisor, and his supervisor wobbled over, and he gave me the stare down, and I gave him the stare down. And he asked me, well, what's my problem? And I told him that my problem is I don't like being manhandled by men for no good reason, which is what this is about. So,
what would a good reason be?
Do you like being manhandled by men for good reason?
right, for a good reason.
I mean, a doctor seeing if you have cancer. Okay. That's a good reason. You wouldn't.
There you go.
Indeed, it would be a doctor who would do that. And of course, that would be a consenting proposition between the two of us, where if he is examining me to try to find out what's wrong with me, certainly we both benefit from that. He gets paid and I get diagnosed.
And some people would say, well, you're consenting by flying, but I would say you're not, because there's a monopoly and there's not an option.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's that whole false argument where they say that your ability to travel is a privilege, which you find nowhere in either the Constitution or any of the other scripts that are handed to us as helots and slaves in this republic that tell us what we can do.
Hey, Bill, will you stay on for 2 hours today?
Yes, I will.
Okay. You had to think about it. Bill's a busy guy. That's the kind of guy you want on, someone who's not just like, yeah, I got nothing better to do. No, he had to think about it. Cool, because we want to talk about the TSA for a while, and then later we want to talk to you about Crimea and what's going on over there, because you know more about world history and military history than anybody. You're probably tied with Scott Horton, but you talk more clearly sometimes. So, yeah.
Well, you're very kind, and remember that July 28th, 1914 is when World War I started, and we're a mere five months away from that 100th anniversary.
Wow.
People have been mentioning that upcoming anniversary a lot in the positioning of the world powers and stuff right now. Do you buy that, or do you think that's a little overblown?
No, I think that history rhymes. I don't think that it naturally occurs, you know, in lockstep, but I certainly think that there are cycles that we go through, and we're going through one of those cycles now. And with the boobs we have in the Waffle House, I don't know. Waffle stands for War Against Freedom and Liberty, Michael. Okay. So I just call it the Waffle House. It's where the
history does rhyme. But sometimes the beats changed, and I guess the beat change is different now. Is there's thermonuclear warheads pointed at between the two major powers? Does that
that's been that way
that
for
change everything?
30 years,
though, amen,
years,
brother. That years. Changes everything, which is why in Afghanistan, which doesn't have nuclear tipped devices yet, that's why we don't screw around with Pakistan in a big way, because we know that they have a nuclear arsenal of sorts, and of course Russia has a nuclear arsenal that is probably a peer competitor to ours.
We'll be back with more.
We'll have plenty more.
Bill, did you ever see the mouse that roared?
I did. Indeed, I did.
We'll be back. We'll talk about that and the TSA and Crimea with Bill Buppert from ZeroGov.com.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com. We're back. Yeah. I had to cut Nima off because we were falling down wormholes on the Googles, on the Wikipedias, and it was not radio friendly, because that's how we play it during the ads.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
No, we listen to the ads. We listen to all our advertisers, and we like them, and we recommend them.
And we always say great things about them during our breaks.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have on air with us today Bill Buppert.
Have you ever had Bill Buppert on before? Have you ever had Bill Buppert, Nima? Have you ever done the show with Bill Buppert?
No. This is my first opportunity to get to interact.
All right, I'm
going to
go make kitty,
Mr. Buppert.
Kitty cat logos for my new software.
Are you really?
Yeah. Because you really should get to know Bill. I've interviewed Bill like 20 times.
Get to know your Buppert.
And Bill is going to be a regular co-host on my new upcoming nighttime weeknight show, Michael Dean After Dark. So, you know, I'm going to be talking to Bill a lot. So why don't you two chat amongst yourselves, and I'll just jump in when I feel like it.
Okay. Well, Bill, did you have stuff to finish up on your TSA story since we have the natural barrier of the short segment to keep you on task?
I did very quickly, and that's that after they had finished their absolutely inappropriate and silly grope, we were about to leave. and Davi probably filled you in on this, and I did get a chance to listen to the show yesterday. But what basically caught my attention is my wife was standing there with me, and we were outside the gated area, and these two BDOs, I think they were behavior detection officers, barely fitting into their dress clothes, of course, because they too waddled, like the other guy.
I gotta interject here, because this is sounding kind of fattest. I know you're a fit older gentleman, and I'm kind of a plump older gentleman who sits in front of the computer too much and doesn't get out enough. And Davi did say that the woman was plump like a bunch of times in his description. Yeah. Is it relevant? I think it probably is, because they probably wouldn't be able to do any job that involves any physicality. But let's explore that just for one parenthetical. Go ahead.
It's relevant to me because what I think with certain genetic disorders, you can't help it. But for the most part, what it speaks to me of is an indiscipline to take care of your own body, much less being responsible for addressing the bodies of other people.
Okay. I got it. I believe it. Go on.
And I hate the fact that police obesity is an epidemic, along with abuse, violence, and all the rest of it. Here's a funny thing. I went to LA Police Gear that sells all the police gear that cops get across the nation. What do you think is the largest size waist they offer in their polyester pants they wear for duty pants? Just guess.
64.
60 inches. You almost got it, though, Nima. You almost got it. You were 4 inches off. Imagine Bill's that, taking a 5-foot man or woman and wrapping them around your waist.
Bill's pounding the pulpit. He's so excited about this. And furthermore, it's these darn, they got to speak English. No, I'm sorry.
I never said that.
I said, people say that on radio all the time. Yeah. Although I like my state rep who said it in a video in English, Arabic, and Spanish. If you're gonna yell at people for not speaking another language, it's more believable if you can speak their language.
Okay. Shukran.
I don't know if that's radio friendly or not, but you spend a lot of time in the Middle East. Yeah. So then what happened?
Okay. Bottom line is this: is that the two who I think were BDOs who weren't in the blue shirts, but they were in very bad ties and very bad shirts and very wide pants. They're the ones who went to Davi and they said, "Hey, I think," and I quote, "I think we saw some Bitcoin in your backpack." At which point I said to them, I said, "Bitcoin is a virtual currency that has no physical manifestation." Now, when I said that, like that, of course, we're dealing with people who probably have a vocabulary that doesn't extend beyond 110 words on a daily basis. So he twisted his brow and he sort of curled his lip, you know, as if, "Well, that guy's talking funny."
Like, you got kind of shaky, right? Talking in funny. Idiocracy. You talk like
yes.
A, yes.
Yeah.
That's
can't
it.
Say that.
But that same thing. But Idiocracy, the cops were perfect in Idiocracy, because I wish we could do that with our cops here, where they must wear Kevlar helmets two sizes too small and drive in smart cars in reverse to do their duties.
Right.
It'd go a long way towards making it more peaceful.
So then what happened?
After you tried to school these two badly dressed BDOs.
Blue shirts.
What happened?
They still insisted that they wanted to inspect Davi's bag, and they started asking him questions about international travel. Now, I was aware that Davi was traveling to San Francisco, and he didn't have an international terminus of any type. Now, CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, and this is a way where we can use the government against itself, they have come out rather jurisdictionally proud that they don't want the TSA mucking around in their jurisdiction, which is
right.
International travel and traveling with coins or valuables, whatever the case may be. They made it clear, well, these TSA guys were mucking up the works with that very thing. What Lilo said is she wasn't aware we weren't traveling together, but what we did say is that he is not traveling internationally. I did know that for a fact. And then somebody went to ask something else, and I said, please don't answer any more questions.
We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people. Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
Yes, sir, it's the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I'm Nima Vidati here, smack dab in the middle of Tejas. We've got Michael W. Dean over there on Airworm One.
Hello.
How's it going, Mr. Dean?
Excellent. I am broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America.
Yes, and we've also got on the line with us the fabulous Bill Buford. I guess fabulous is probably a bad adjective.
Fabulous!
He's more of a manly man. He's too
outstanding.
Manly to be fabulous.
Outstanding.
Yes, he's outstanding. There you go.
Yeah.
Are you there with us, Bill?
You had a question for
me. Well, there
Bill,
it is. Right? I'm right here.
Yeah, so Bill, fill in the holes. Tell us the story of what happened for the people that didn't hear yesterday, and also for those who did, to hear your perspective on it. Because you can't film at these things. Like, people say, well, maybe these guys made it up, but you can't. That's a statist answer to try to degrade any accusations of the state, because you can't. They take your cell phone, and if you start filming anyway at a TSA thing, they're going to pull you out of line and take you in room 228 and rubber hose you. And they have cameras, but you could not FOIA request that. They'd say it's national security.
There's no doubt that's a case. And I just want to make it very quick, though. And where we left off in the last hour was that we had established that he was not on international travel. And much like a roadblock that's set up by the Border Patrol, once they establish that you're not on international travel and that you are a U.S. citizen, all talk has to stop at that point, unless they have reasonable articulable suspicion or probable cause that you're committing some other crime that they have available at their behest, where they can, you know, throw you down and do all the things that police enjoy doing today in modern-day USSA. But in this case, what happened is, we said, no, he is not traveling internationally. Apparently, that sort of flipped a switch, and they stopped asking questions. They kept being concerned, but they let Davi come out. Davi came out. You know, it's a whole drill where we're putting our clothes back on. We're putting our belts, our shoes, and getting all our stuff that's been inconveniently taken from us for their search. And we're doing that, and then we wander back to our gate, which is probably about 300 meters from the TSA place. So we're over there, and we discover that both the overweight toads, the BDOs, and one of their blue shirts is looking around the corner. They've stationed themselves around the corner, and they've got a BDI on Davi, maybe myself at the time, but I think Davi was a target. And Davi's wearing this Bitcoins Not Bombs orange sweatshirt. So I said, Davi, let's make this a little harder on them. Here's my blue sweatshirt that I have in my pack. You should always carry one of those. And take this and put it on and take off your orange one. It'll make it more difficult for the drones to watch you. So he did that, and then that's when Davi took out his phone and started recording and dictating his verbal affidavit on what happened so that his memory would be keen, since it just happened moments before. And then we got on our flights, and there was nothing after that, and there it is. And then he came back and wrote his brilliant thought piece for his Bitcoin for Daily Anarchist, and there it is.
Yep.
Why should you always carry a blue sweatshirt on you?
Well, it doesn't have to be blue. It should be a sweatshirt, though, that's blue, black, or something like that, so they can't pick you out of crowd. It's much like you should have a paper surgical mask with you, so that if you happen to be renting a car and you're driving, and you know that there's red light cameras, whatever the case may be, with said surgical mask and sunglasses and maybe the ball cap if you care to wear one, it's very hard for them to photo identify you or do any kind of facial recognition.
And as opposed to like wearing a Halloween mask, which would be questionable to most people when it's not Halloween, people do wear surgical masks in high smog areas all the time or high pollen areas. And
absolutely. And you go to Asia and everyone seems to wear them.
Yeah, yeah. They'll outlaw that when they get the cameras everywhere.
So the bottom line is the TSA was typical in their arrogance and their stupidity, which is sort of like it's a conjoined apparatus for them, where it seems to be necessary that they be both arrogant and stupid.
It just keeps reminding me of Idiocracy. If people have not seen that film, they have to go see it. It's kind of a
– This is it.
It's a comedy, but it takes place 500 years in the future. It's basically the U.S. Army – picks the most average soldier they have. He has an average IQ, average height, average weight, average looks, everything, to do an experiment for suspended animation. They put him in this big pod, and they put this woman in the pod next to him who signed up for medical research. And something happens, and instead of getting woken up in a year, he's woken up in 500 years. And America and the world has devolved into absolute idiocracy. And there are everyone is basically, I won't say retarded, but differently challenged intelligence level. And he was the most average guy in America in our times, and he is the smartest guy in the world in the future, and they hate him for it. And that's basically what it's like dealing with these goons that are hired off a pizza box right now.
It's why I refer to the TSA and the police as a moronathon.
So, Nima, you had a follow-up question.
Yeah, well, to the people that say, well, how come these guys – how do we know they're not just making it up? Yeah, there's that point that you can't record it. But there also seems to be the point that it's so believable. I mean, even if they were making it up, I think there's a story in the fact that so many people can buy the incompetency of the TSA and the complete utter lack of any kind of knowledge about what they're supposed to be doing. And even the fact that what are they supposed to be doing? What's their point? Is it literally just theater? Is there any actual
legitimate role? They've never stopped a terrorist. They say they have all the time, but you know, the shoe bomber was stopped by citizens on the plane.
We can ask that of Bill. Bill, as a former military guy, a guy that probably knows a thing or two about security, is there any actual security benefit to the TSA?
None. Zero. Nada. Not a whit of security is there. And as a matter of fact, think of it this way. If you were very wise and savvy about meeting up with people who own restaurants and all the water kiosks and stuff like that on the other side of the gate, you could quite easily get what you needed over there, make the necessary contacts or blind drops to get the equipment that you needed, take it onto the aircraft and do what you need to do. I mean, the ultimate irony to me is that when they tell the pilot of the aircraft that, oh no, you can bring your gun on board, but you can't have your nail clippers because they're proscribed. But he doesn't even need the gun. All he needs to do is grab the yoke with both hands, push it forward all the way at 35,000 feet, and not let up until he reaches an altitude of zero.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, another thing about my believing that this really happened is it would be a really serious crime if you guys made this up. You'd probably be in custody if you made this up.
Only the cops can lie. We are not allowed to do that. It's that kind of reverse transparency where the government demands this kind of transparency of all electronic transactions and human behavior on our part. But when it comes to the NSA and all of their tentacle apparatchiks, no. They hide behind secrecy.
Not only are they allowed to lie, but aren't they trained to lie? Isn't that what the BDO guys are there to do, is to subtly push you into incriminating yourself?
All of us have been in a courtroom, and you'd have to sew your mouth shut not to have your mouth agape and your chin hit the floor when you hear all the lies that come from the officers who are there.
Yeah. I was looking back to some of these comments on the Boing Boing, on the Boing Boings, boingboing.net, of just the state apologist suffering from what's that place in Europe where people have a
Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's, I mean, this one is like, and I like this one because it mentions a phrase I made up that Davi used, and we have buttons available that say this. State speech is hate speech. You can go to buttons, the button link on freedomfiends.com. This guy said, I find it hard to take an article seriously that uses the phrase state speech is hate speech in response to someone asking him to please actually answer a straightforward question without being a snarky Richard about it. I mean, these people rape you. They rape your grandmother. Like, what they do, you know, if you lined someone up in a mall, if you went up to some woman in a mall and did to her what the TSA does all day, every day, you would be arrested and thrown in prison for 5 to 10 years. I mean, it is digital, meaning with your fingers, rape. That's what they do. Well, and they do it to grandmothers and little girls and little boys and men and women. And men have to stand there while another man does it to their wife and can't do anything about it. What kind of world is that, man?
Well, it's awful, but it's also, if a stranger came up to you and started asking you questions, shouldn't you have the right? And isn't it actually your duty to find out why they're questioning you, why they're asking you personal questions if you don't know who they are? And as far as I know, these guys didn't have any kind of badge or insignia on them, did they, Bill?
They did not. Well, they simply had one of those typical badges that you see that would take you through a door.
A computer can read it, but people can't.
Exactly. You know, but ask yourself this question. We have to get back to basics and fundamentals, which is this. I've said this before on your show, Michael, so forgive me, but if the government didn't violate the Ten Commandments, it couldn't exist. If the government has an absolute inability to lie or get away with lying, it can't exist.
Oh, we did
because
a whole,
no one would tolerate it.
We did a whole show on that, a Freedom Fiend show on the Ten Commandments, and went through them all and named how it's called All Governments Break All Ten Commandments All Day,
all the time.
Every Day. If you want to Google that, that's a good episode. All Governments Break All Ten Commandments All Day, Every Day. Google that and it'll come up. Neem and I did an expose on that and went through it specifically and gave specific examples.
Yeah.
So, Neema.
So, in the end, though, what the TSA did was they proved once again their incompetence. But I offer this one tip for all travelers. I always opt out on principle, but I've been reading up, and I found this at the Daily Anarchist. If you complain that your shoulders are such that you have John McCain syndrome and you can't reach above the perpendicular when your elbows are out, they will not put you through the porno scanner and they'll walk you through the metal detector and you probably won't have to get groped.
Well, John McCain syndrome. Is that a thing?
Is that a real thing? Do you use that term, though? I don't know if I'd use that term.
You could if you wanted to, but say I sustained a shoulder injury and I can't lift my arms above that plane.
Well, I think
then they'll say, well, obviously you can't go through the porno scanner because in order for me to flip them the bird with my hands on the side of my head, I have to have it on my head. And John, that's what I've done in the porno scanner one time before, to which the woman who was standing there watching me said, sir, that isn't necessary, to which I turned to her and said, madam, neither are you.
I think John McCain syndrome is the fact that the TSA exists in the way they do, because John McCain backed it very heavily. Now, was he the politician or was it somebody else who had some kind of financial connection with the people who create these giant monstrosity machines that cost lots of money and don't do anything?
No, that was like
I don't know, but I wouldn't doubt that Feinstein would have a connection of one type or another.
Who was that, Neema? Neema, our crack research team. You have to give them more crack and they'll do research. No, I'm kidding. So Bill, what's your takeaway from all of this for the end of this segment?
My takeaway is that all of us in the Liberty and Freedom Movement who always assume that the government is stupid, this just reinforces that. Because here you have people who probably got a Fusion Center report that said Bitcoin's dangerous, Bitcoin's a competitor, and Bitcoin exists in real life.
And probably had
those,
a picture.
Those lapel pins look like Bitcoin.
Well, they always use a picture of a physical representation that doesn't exist of Bitcoin. So we'll be back with more.
It's a fourth grade thing.
More on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buebert from ZeroGov.com.
Listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Turn off!
You need some Ricola, Michael? I need some extra strength Glacier Mint.
I'm suffering from churn off. Churn off.
Yes.
Churn awful.
The Chernoff massacre.
Talk about Chernoff.
Not massacre. Yeah.
Our crack using research team found the answer. It took a while.
Crack Googling team.
We had to give them some crack.
Crack. You were wondering if it was John McCain.
We're
that
not
has some
using
kind of
crack. We
interest.
Don't have crack. Don't kick in our doors. We're joking. We're making a stupid fifth grade joke about the word crack.
Yes.
So go
Good
on.
Job.
I need
no,
to see
it was,
your crack.
It was Michael Chertoff who was the Secretary of Homeland Security. Or the administrative assistant
Skeletor.
Of Homeland Security, I guess we can call him. Yes, he does look like Skeletor. And he also owns a company called the Chertoff Group, which represents such firms as Rapiscan, who then helps guide them through the government
it's
buying process.
Rapiscan, but it sounds like Rapiscan.
It looks like Rapiscan to me. I'm going to call it Rapiscan.
Yeah, because that's who makes the porno scanners, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah. And so he set up this need in the government, or this fake need in the government, for these rapist scanners. And then he helped rapist scan sell them to the government. So, hey, yeah, man, that's conflict of interest.
That really is. What do you think, Bill?
Well, that conflict of interest isn't unusual, because when Admiral Crow was the CNO, the Chief of Naval Operations, shortly after he left, vaccinations became required. You'll remember this for the anthrax vaccines. He had a majority share portion in a San Diego firm that was behind supplying those vaccinations. So this kind of turnstile where you have government employees who step out into the private sector, you see it with the Federal Reserve and Wall Street all the time, and the banksters.
Do you think it's possible that the first time there was an anthrax scare in a government building, it may have been an inside job? I don't even want to go there, but let's say they would have a reason to do that.
There's no evidence for that, but of course, causal and correlative relationships never lead to logical conclusions in the government. You know, They don't care.
And here on the Freedom Fiends, our whole thing is we don't really go conspiracy, because there's so much that governments do that's on their website that they admit to that we can cover
that's
clearly.
Awful. Yeah.
So let's stick to that.
Well, if you look at STDs and you look at LSD and you look at all the other abbreviations like that, and what the government's done to experiment on people, it shows that it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Another thing is, the crisis doesn't have to be invented by them in order for them to exploit it, because they exploit any and all crises. It's the whole crisis and Leviathan ratchet effect thing, where anytime something bad happens in the world, which it's bound to, they use it as an excuse to grab more power for themselves.
Look, an audience as intellectually keen as yours is familiar with Occam's razor, which is that the simplest explanation is most likely the explanation. But Hanlon's razor riffs off of that by saying, never attribute to malice that which can adequately be explained by stupidity.
Yes, that's a great one.
So when it comes to government, I mean, stupidity, it rules the realm.
So is it just stupidity, or is it lack of caring? Is it that these guys are actively stupid and they hope to be doing the right thing, or is it that they're only interested in raising their own stock, so to speak, like this Cheridoff guy, that they just get into power and then use it for their own personal gains without regard to any kind of greater good, if such a thing even existed? So it's not necessarily being stupid about what works for society, but only caring about what works for your own life.
Well, and they make the mistake that if you use illegitimate means, you can have legitimate ends. And I would submit to you that, and we all follow this as liberty folks, that if you use legitimate means at all times, your ends will be legitimate for the most part.
For the most part, what are the outliers? <Let's see.
laughs> Well, and the reason I say there's outliers and black swans is because there's such a thing as unintended consequences. There's things where you and I may think it's perfectly keen to do something, but it may not necessarily be effective, but it's efficient, because you can have effectiveness with efficiency, but you don't necessarily have to have efficiency and have effectiveness linked to it.
Yeah, and I guess that's so true. And where the divergence is between that how that works on a grand scale with the government and how it works in your own life is the mistakes you make and the inefficiencies you have in your personal dealings will only hurt you, and you can learn from them and respond to them quicker because you're the one receiving the negative consequences. But if you're in some kind of giant state apparatus, you probably don't even get the feedback of the pain being caused by your actions or your planning until years later, and you're already out of office by that point.
I couldn't say it better, Nima.
Oh, well, that's sweet.
That's
though.
Been Bill Buepert. We're going to have Bill Buepert back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends. Bill Buepert is a retired Army officer, security expert. And from his website, you can go to his website is zerogov.com. And hour two is going to be the history class and the geography class and the geopolitical situation room with Bill Buepert talking about Crimea. Going all the way back.
We're
going to
ask the question of Crimea, and the answer will not be Merca.
Merca. Yeah, there was a great thing today. Someone said, we need to invade Crimea. I'm Googling now to figure out why.
And in the comments, the answer was because Merca.
Merca.
All right, we'll be back, Freedom Fiends. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah.
Buttons.
Worms. Say worms, Bill.
Worms.
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 Yeah!
All right, I guess we have Howard Dean on instead of Michael Dean. This is Nima Vedati for the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show. I'm out here in the central of the Texas. We've got Michael Dean. I guess he's in his bunker. I thought he was in Airworm
no
One.
Relation.
He's landed.
No relation. No relation to Howard Dean.
None at all. And also on the horn with us, we've got Bill Buepert. We'll leave him undisclosed for
PBA.
Now. BPA, yes, in your water bottle. So I guess we were going to talk about this whole Ukraine thing. It's huge, and we didn't talk about it yesterday because Michael's been so busy. He didn't really know a whole lot about it. I don't know. I haven't been reading as much as I should either. But I know that that's a scary situation, man, a showdown between two world powers, the Russian Federation, the United States, over the Ukraine. I guess not the Ukraine, but just Ukraine. And Russia has troops defending its naval base in Sevastopol. Is that right, Bill?
Sevastopol, yes. In the Black
Sevastopol.
Sea.
Sevastopol. In the Black Sea. Which the Black Sea is that Russia's main outlet to the Mediterranean and I guess the Atlantic as a whole?
I'm not certain whether it is because they've had a number of fleet changes throughout the decades, especially with the fall of the USSR. But it is a major port facility. It was, of course, the I think the site of the battleship Potemkin at the turn of the 20th century in 1918, 1919, and 1920, when the Soviet Union came into play against where the Red Army fought the White Army, naval forces, the whole thing. So, yeah, it's been a vital port for the Russians for the longest time.
Right. So this is and it is Russia's port, right? Even though it's in Ukraine, it's Russia's territory. Is that correct?
You know what? I'm going to stipulate that because that's something that we can discover through your crack research team. They can find out what that was.
I think they're already out of crack and demanding more. That's how quick it goes.
Right, right. I don't want to speak out of turn because we can really twist the history with this. I think that's one thing that has been mentioned in the news that's critically important here is I did a internship with Robert Conquest at the Hoover Institution when I was going to Humboldt State University. When you go to Humboldt State University in California, that's right. You go to Berkeley and you say, no, Berkeley's too right-wing and oppressive for me. I'm going to Humboldt. So that's where I ended up. But nonetheless, I go to the Hoover Institution. And mind you, Robert Conquest is one of those Kremlinologists who had never been captured by this sort of almost girlish love of communism. He wasn't a fanboy at all. And he called the ball. He wrote about the terror famine in the Ukraine, what they called the Holodomor. What the Holodomor was extermination by hunger. So in 1920 and 21, that extermination took place. And from 1932 to 1933, I think it was, there was also a terror famine in the Ukraine. And the death tolls vary, but they range from 1.8 to 12 million. And the 1.8 number, of course, would come from communist lovers. And the 12 million would come from folks like the guy at the University of Hawaii who talks about democide.
Yeah, they
and this isn't like a famine in Somalia either, right? Like Ukraine was called the breadbasket of Europe.
That's where they turned
this is a government-imposed famine.
That's where they coined the phrase barricade rabbit, which was a term for eating wild cats or feral cats. Because of the barricades, that was the closest thing to food or rabbit you could have. Hey, have you seen, Bill... Have you seen the footage recently, the amazing man on the street footage, like the hour-long video of the street fighting in Ukraine between the government and the people? And it's like the people aren't even armed with guns. They're fighting police and military who have rifles, and they're fighting them with like sticks. Have you seen that?
They've gone medieval. I've been watching this for weeks, but the sad part about this is that I think they're going to go to guns soon enough, but I guarantee you if this same kind of protest had happened in the USA,
oh, man,
the cops would have gone to gun immediately, and there would have been hundreds of maimed and killed protesters strewn around the streets.
And that's also – I really think that's why they have these bearcats is not, you know, for the crackhead barricaded in the hotel room that they need to extradite and serve a warrant like they say. I think it's because they fear this kind of thing is going to come to America, and Americans don't just have pistols and sticks. They have rifles. And, you know – I mean, it would be ugly, and I really, I think all police officers should step down now and go get jobs outside of that realm, because some cops are good people, man, and I think when that happens, I mean, they can hide in their bearcats all day long, and I'm not saying this would be a good thing, but those guys have to go sleep at night somewhere, and that's horrifying because they don't have the bearcats for that. And I'm not just saying like, you know, like right wingers with pistols. I'm talking about like every criminal they've ever hassled and thrown in jail also owns a gun here in America.
Well, among some of the hero Snowden's many gifts to the Western world, he has yet to disclose a list that he has. That's a composite list of all physical home addresses of all government employees from the local to the federal level.
Oh, my God. That was one of the...
I don't think that's going to get disclosed.
Of sorts.
That was one of the plot points in that book, Unintended Consequences. And that was like before the internet was what it is now. But it was like somebody released, you know, a list of just one office of, you know, like one three-letter agency on bulletin boards. That was when that book was written.
Yep.
Yeah. So
on to Crimea and on to the importance of the Battle of Crimea. From 1853 to 1856, there was a Battle of Crimea that we see in The Charge of the Light Brigade. Whether you've read that or seen the bad movie or whatever the case may be, it's where the Russians fought the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottoman Empire was joined by France and Britain in fighting back the Russians. Because when you look at the 19th century and the great game that was played back then, the Russians were starting to emerge. The French were starting to emerge, and the British were the world power. The Germans, once they became a nation state in 1870, were starting to emerge. And you see, for instance, what's interesting here is there so many mercurial and distinctly odd moments in history where you wonder, but they were allied with them 10 years ago. Why are they allied with those folks now? Because the German houses and the British houses for centuries had been aligned by birth. Kaiser Wilhelm II in World War I was the grandson of Queen Victoria. And these kind of internecine and maybe incestuous relationships between the royal houses were there for the longest time, and France had been enemy number one to Great Britain until 1890. Now, why that is, I don't think it's within the constraints of this show to discuss that, but it just shows you how frequently mobile these kind of alliances are. What scares me the most about the Ukraine right now is the 1994 agreement when the U.S. and the Brits came to the leaders at the time. It was the drunk in Russia.
Yeltsin.
It was Boris Yeltsin, the drunk. And what they said was, if the Ukraine is invaded, we are going to come to the Ukraine's aid if the Ukraine is invaded by Russia. Man. And he signed off on that. Now,
I didn't know that. There's a Ukrainian war guarantee similar to the war guarantee for Poland?
Oh, wow. Yes, there is. There's a war guarantee. If you find Ukraine, you'll see on the Telegraph, if you look it up, have your crack research team find this. But I think it was published a couple days ago. But what the Ukraine is pleading for is for Britain and the U.S. to come to its rescue because of this alleged invasion as a result of this 1994 agreement. Now, I am one, the same as my skepticism of the Constitution, I am skeptical of all treaties for which there wasn't a signature block for Bill Buprin. I'm not signing up for it.
The crack research team left. They're out roaming the streets with pistols and sticks.
Well, that's what I was going to go to next. I didn't find that on the Telegraph. I was just looking at antiwar.com. Their top headline right now is Ukraine threatens war over Crimea. Obviously, options are limited is the subtitle. Now, because how can the current Ukrainian government wage a war against Russia? That seems as silly as Serbia waging a war against the Austro-Hungarian Empire back in World War I days. I mean, is there a parallel there at all? Because basically Ukraine is asking for is for the bigger powers to attack Russia.
You're asking me two questions with that one question, and those two questions are this. Why would they be inclined to go to war with Russia? And historically, I think Holodomor really speaks to that, much like the Holocaust speaks to Israelis and people who suffered through that, and Jews around the world in their diaspora. But the other question is, could they sustain a battle against the Russians? Of course they could. Right now in Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, and various other neo-imperialist mud pits that we found ourselves mired in, or maybe we'll call them briar patches, we have men with guns, men with rifles, who have no artillery, no navy, no air force, nothing of the sort, who have brought this hyper-military power, in this case the United States, to a strategic stalemate. I can see that happening if the Russians get embroiled in a guerrilla conflict in the Ukraine.
But in Afghanistan, there's no other giant power or even major regional power in Afghanistan that's opposing U.S. interests. Would the U.S. oppose Russian interests in Ukraine if Russia were to become more active in splitting Ukraine into two or something like that?
You know, I think they would, and it wouldn't be out of intelligent statesmanship or wanting to do the right thing. Because as all of us know in your audience and there in your studio, this is all about power. That's all. It's all about my ability to control this group of cattle in a tax jurisdiction. That's really what it comes down to. You certainly see that with what happened in Russian Georgia 4 years ago. In this case, though, will the U.S. get involved? The U.S. is involved. The U.S. State Department has admitted so much that they've been funding these protesters. And these protesters in the EU, people have to understand, these protesters in Ukraine, people have to understand what they're asking for is they're not asking for any kind of settlement or a libertarian utopia that, that you and I and Michael would ask for. What they're asking for is throw us from the frying pan into the fire. Throw us from this supposedly unstable Russian Federation that we're in into the European Union in that central banking mess. So, and why are they doing that? They're doing that because there are agents provocateur and lots of funding with money they don't have by the U.S. government and its European allies to put a burr in the saddle of the Russians.
Right, and funding to the tune of, I think, $5 billion is the number people are quoting. And people are upset, more upset with Pete Omidyar's funding, which amounts to, I think, less than or right at $1 million.
Yeah,
they're blaming him for this whole thing.
Because he's one of the billionaires who's funding Glenn Greenwald's great new site, The Intercept. And, you know, people are saying like, oh, look what we found by digging in the cracks, the secret cracks. And Glenn Greenwald responded this morning like, I just Googled it and found the press release he issued 5 years ago when he did this. This is not hidden. And, you know, Nima points out it's a drop in the bucket compared to what the
like
U.S. is doing.
It's like 0.05% or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a non-voter, but I think the full disclosure of where money chains lead and where money chains go is great. So if we know he gave the money – whatever his intentions, if he gave the money, there it is. Why can't the U.S. government be that transparent?
And I imagine that billionaires probably send million-dollar checks to various organizations, you know, when maybe they're high on ether or something. I'm not saying he is.
Like Freedom Fiends.
You know, I mean, no, Freedom Fiends are the most independent. We are the most independent nationally syndicated news source in the country. Literally, the most. I mean, Free Talk Live is probably the second most, but they have more advertisers. We get like $300 a month in advertising, and our cost is like $200 a month to run this show. So, you know, if you want to advertise on Freedom Fiends, drop us a note at talkback@freedomfiends.com. But yeah, I imagine these billionaires probably drop $1 million like grandma buys a $69 ring on the shopping channel. We'll be back with more with Dr. Bill Buppert, military expert. Not really doctor. We've just knighted him as a doctor in the Freedom Fiends University.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vidati. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the depths of his bunker.
Radio.
Converted from an old missile silo, the kind of old missile silos that they apparently must have a lot of in Ukraine. Bill was telling me, in fact, they used to be one of the highest concentrations of strategic nuclear weapons housed in Ukraine?
Well, as a matter of fact, third largest with 1,900 of those strategic warheads that were located there. But on June 1st, 1996, the Ukraine became a non-nuclear nation, allegedly, when they sent allegedly the last of those 1,900 to Russia proper. Now, all of us know who pay attention to the news over the past two decades that accountability of Russian nuclear weapons hasn't been the best. And that could some of those weapons still be in the Ukraine, or could they have been repatriated to the Ukraine over the past few years after 1996? Of course they could. So,
I mean, there's like 10 Hollywood movies where a central plot point is some Russian, you know, former general who is not getting a paycheck anymore from the Soviet Union is selling nukes out the back door of a milk truck to somebody else. So that probably
was a great Bond film.
Yeah. There's like 10 films like that, man. So is that a real thing? Are there broken arrows, as they call the missing nukes?
You know, the U.S. may have very well found some broken arrows, and that's what they use in the U.S. parlance for a missing nuclear weapon. They may have found some, but they haven't revealed that to be the case. We've only seen it in Hollywood.
There's actually a Hollywood movie where that happens. I watched it recently. I can't remember the name of it, but it's great. And it is the Ukraine that's selling them out the back door from a milk truck.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past any of these nation states in the kind of economic downturns that they're suffering and such, to find a means to do that very thing.
Yeah.
Well, so if there were some nukes left in Ukraine, some strategic nuclear weapons left over. Who would be in control of that? Would that be the Russian-influenced pieces of the government? Or, I mean, and what happens now that the protesters have sort of won? Is that why they're brave enough to threaten war against Russia?
No, I don't think the protesters or anybody who's there trying to get themselves insinuated into the EU and broken away from the Ukraine proper or bifurcate the nation or whatever the case may be may have access to those. I say this and point that out because the fact that we're talking, that the U.S. is even talking beyond terms of diplomacy and possibly using force against Russia and the Ukraine, it just opens up a nuclear can of worms.
Worms. Right.
There may not be one nuclear weapon in the Ukraine, but we do know there are a large there is a large arsenal of nuclear weapons in Russia proper, and they have proven in the past that not only are they willing to fight under a conflagration, but they also designed their forces during the Warsaw Pact days to fight in that very fashion, where it wasn't a matter of not using nuclear weapons. It was a matter of using nuclear weapons in concert with conventional troops. And because of that realization on the part of NATO at the time, NATO established a first use policy against conventional troops in the Warsaw Pact in the 1980s and 90s.
Let me ask you a minarchist, put on my minarchist hat and ask you a question about military strategy here. The people at the U.S. government and the U.S. military who are in charge of doing what they can to keep rogue nukes out of the hands of enemy combatants, are they any better trained than the TSA people who think they saw Bitcoin in Davi's bag?
You know, I don't have any background in that, so I can't really do anything but speculate. But I think that all government works to the aggregate of stupidity.
Well, and what Scott Horton says
because of that.
From what I hear, that it's the low end of the totem pole to be in the nuclear department if you're in the military. That's not where people want to be because all you do is sit around and do nothing all day pretty much because we don't go out there and use our nukes all the time, right?
Who's this we of who you're speaking, Nemo?
Oh, because they don't go out and nuke people all day. But if you're in the Air Force, you go out and bomb people with drones all day. So if you want to be upwardly mobile in the military, you're going to be in some kind of unit that is actively doing things all day, not sitting there babysitting a bunch of weapons
In a silo looking at a guy 12 feet away when you both have like a revolver sidearm and you're eyeing each other like, you better press the button when the time comes.
Well, what I'd suggest to your audience is that you look up all the disciplinary and systemic problems that they're having in the Air Force nuclear forces with their landborne missiles here in the U.S. And if you start page that, you'll find a number of very troubling issues where people who shouldn't be near a red button at Staples, much less one in a silo, are still there.
Wow. Right. And more to the point, though, is I don't even think we're concerned about broken arrows and rogue agents. I think what we're concerned about with Ukraine is the missiles in the Russian military, the legitimate so-called missiles.
We're going to give out the call-in number. It's 1-855-660-4261. If you're listening live, call in at 1-855.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Nima, will you give it out?
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Repo Man. We are Repo Men. No, we're not, but we like the movie Repo Man. Not to be confused with all the repo shows.
Who's we?
Who's we? Yeah, we got a conversation. You said we again. You said we again, talking about the U.S. federal government's military policy. And I kept doing the Ian Freeman thing of the recursive Sheldon Cooper loop of who's we? Who's we? Who's we? And that is accurate because we don't decide who gets nuked or, you know, which revolutions get funded and who spends what money on spying. We should stop saying we. It's them, man. The U.S. federal government is not you. It's not anyone listening. It's against you. They look at you as an enemy. I mean, they really do because they wanted to try Snowden, with treason, which is giving aid to the enemy, and he gave aid to the U.S. citizens, so they must consider the U.S. citizens the enemy. That's what Ron Paul said. So, yeah, go ahead with your bad self there, Bill Buport and Nima Vedati.
So, Bill, Ukraine's threatening war over Crimea, Obama's warning that there's going to be dire consequences, and according to Reuters, Putin's saying, well, hey, we have a right to protect our Russian interests in Ukraine. And you brought up that there's some 94 agreement that amounts to basically a war guarantee. Is that right on the part of Western Europe and the United States with regard to Ukraine versus Russia?
Yeah, it was the Budapest Memorandum, which was signed by Bill Clinton, John Major, then the UK boss, Boris Yeltsin, the drunk, and Leonid Kuchma. And so, that was Kuchma was the head of the Ukraine at the time, who has since been succeeded by other thugs.
So I'll say, have they, and by they I mean world leaders, learned the lesson that these silly war guarantees aren't worth plunging a whole world into war over, especially when the two main powers have enough thermonuclear weapons to pretty much destroy the whole world? Do you think they're smart enough to realize the folly of honoring some 1994 agreement written by a bunch of politicians who are no longer in power?
The short answer is no. And the long answer is that if we look at World War I, and I would love for your audience to spend a little more time examining that conflict and the black swans and unintended consequences and everything else that started that war, July 28th, 1914, and what it led to, because that war actually led to World War II, which led in turn to the Cold War, which led in turn to communism as a world power until 1989, 91, all the rest of it. All of that was authored in World War I, and World War I was authored because of these kind of idiotic guarantees signed on by a very few men at the time, a very few men in charge who said, yeah, I'm going to sign on for the millions of citizens that I have, and I'm going to put their lives in the ringer and at stake to save your butts if you get in trouble for one reason or another. To me, it's immoral in so many ways. It's fatuous from a legal perspective. You know, if we had a sane legal system, and to sign on to these guarantees and say, for instance, with Taiwan, I feel the same way. I think we should.
Yeah.
I think that neutrality is the essence of statesmanship virtue.
Well, and these agreements, I mean, they basically just set it up to where a black swan event can plunge the world into darkness.
What's a black swan? You guys use that about 25 times. I don't know what that is.
Okay, Nassim Taleb wrote a book called The Black Swan. In The Black Swan, what he says is that for the most part of medieval times, everybody saw a white swan. And when they saw a black swan, they did not think that could possibly exist. Yet there it was in front of them, and they were all surprised. And they could not possibly extrapolate that a black swan would exist. People look at Pearl Harbor as a black swan. I would look at World War I as a black swan, because 10 years prior to 1914, America was actually in a golden age economically. And of course, that golden age was eradicated by World War I. And I would suggest that not only did the War of Northern Aggression that ended in 1865 when Lincoln put us all on the plantation, and the 20 years between then and 1893, 30 years, when we were exterminating all the Aboriginal Americans, by the time 1893 arrived, we had no more war to wage. But because of the Hawaiians, we said, let's annex Hawaii. Then in 1898, we said, hey, let's go to the Philippines, Cuba, and all the rest of it. And then you fast forward now. America is probably one of the most militaristic nations that has ever existed since Rome existed. Now, we're told a lie all the time in our government obedience classes in government school that, well, we do that because we fight for their freedom and we're trying to liberate the world and we're trying to make the world safe for democracy. God help them.
Those classes are where we end up saying we. I mean, our whole lives, we are taught to say we when we talk about the actions of the United States government. It's not we, man.
Yes, it is. You know, everything that is happening in the Ukraine is an artifact and a residual of the bad habits America has formed as a governing nation through the 20th century. It's all coming home to roost. And I don't think it will end well for the bum in the White House right now.
Yeah, and if you're somebody who believes in democracy as the best situation that can be used to organize society, if you really believe that 51% of idiots who can't tie their shoes being able to vote to point the government guns to tell you what to do, if you're one of those people, then you probably should use the word we when the government does something horrible that you hate and would vote against. It is we, because you're co-signing it by agreeing with that social contract.
Well, and if you're into democracy, Ukrainian leader was democratically elected, right? Yanukovych won the elections fair and square. So it was about democracy.
But so was Hitler in 1933.
Well, yeah, exactly. Democracy doesn't mean much, does it?
Yeah, so was the guy they threw out the Iranian Revolution. Yeah, exactly. The U.S. really – what did – Nima said something today that I thought was a joke. What's the CIA thing, the National Endowment for Democracy? I thought you were joking and making a play on the National Endowment for the Arts. There's something actually called the National Endowment for Democracy that is the U.S. is like funneling, channeling through the big channel, the money channel to the rest of the world to like oust democratically elected leaders and put in democratically elected leaders that the U.S. can control. Isn't that a basic summation that's accurate?
I couldn't come up with a better summation of what they would do with that money. Sure, that's exactly what they do. That's what they're doing in the Ukraine as we speak.
Yeah.
So I guess to boil it down, how scared do we have to be over some real confrontation? I mean, something other than grandstanding.
Here's what we have to look at as far as the United States. Could the U.S. get into a war – not us, but could the U.S. get into a war with Russia? This could happen. Could this, as the Union of Concerned Scientists used to have this this clock that had minutes to midnight for nuclear conflagration between the nations that were nuclear armed? I don't know whether that those minutes are going to clock closer to midnight, which is when the clock bongs and all the nuclear missiles become airborne and intersect in each other's respective nation states. I would suggest, though, that people be prepared for a black swan event in which that possibility is more real today than it was last week.
How scared should families be like mine who have a kid in the military that they're going to get shipped over there for no reason to be a boot on the ground?
Well, all families should be scared of that, and they should have been scared since 1861.
What happened then?
That's when the War of Northern Aggression started and Lincoln invaded the South.
I mean, I knew that, but, you know, not everybody catches. You move so quickly, Bill, that a lot of people can't keep up with you, and that's one reason we love having you on here. Go ahead, Nima.
He's saying the U.S. has been on war footing since then.
Yeah.
And you should always
It has been, and it was Lincoln who gave us conscription in 63. If any of you have ever seen the movie Gangs of New York, it's all about why conscription didn't go so well in the Big Apple.
Because people said, I don't want to fight in your war. I want to fight in my own war. Is that basically
when were they where throwing was people Guthrie in jail?
Then? Where was Arlo Guthrie then?
I don't know, man. How come all the good anti-war people from the 60s were leftists? Were there any non-leftist good anti-war people back then?
You know, there were, and it started with Taft. And it also, if you look back in the 30s, there was something called America First, in which I think it was Charles Lindbergh was going to run for the presidency against Red D.R. at one point or another. And he was on the America First Committee, which said neutrality is the way we need to organize ourselves as a society in our Congress and marriage to other nation states.
Well, a lot of it, too, was about conscription rather than being anti-war. Like, didn't Nixon get elected by a promise to end the draft, which he did? Like, people weren't as anti-war as they said. They were anti them being shipped off to war.
You just summed it up. And yes, indeed. But I think another reason why Nixon came into being and was able to get into office was because of LBJ's shenanigans.
And he got elected by basically saying that his opponent was going to nuke, you know, start World War III with a nuke. Which was really just off the cuff talk. I don't think he really wanted to do it. Maybe he did. I don't know. But you know, the guy who beat him on that promise is the guy who was sending everyone over there against their will and cutting their hair and putting a rifle in their hand and making them shoot for their lives.
Absolutely.
Hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? At least back then, at least the hippies were anti-warmongering Democrat. Now the new hippies, you know, the Apple iPod owners and everything's beautiful. We have a black president. Everything's fixed. Those people are blind, most of them, man. They're like, hey, Obama can do no wrong. And you say he's a baby killer. He's blowing up wedding parties to kill one guy and killing 50 people, including women and children. And
well, it's because like, anybody who knows any better becomes a libertarian. That's why. It's because the only people left
Look,
on that
it's
side.
It's also because when you see the media coordinator for Occupy Wall Street on Slate publishing a 7 or 10 item list of why communism isn't so bad, that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
You discover what they're about. You know, you scratch them, I wouldn't play scratch and sniff with a collectivist, but if you did that, it's going to have the odor of dead bodies.
Because
ultimately, that's what they achieve.
When you scratch a collectivist, you're scratching the scent of everyone they've ever rubbed up against because they're collectivists. They collect the scent. Yeah.
Well, I read a great quote today on somebody's blog. It didn't even have a name. It was like some British blog. And he said that the reason Marxism is doomed to a totalitarian H-hole is because everybody imagines themselves as the planner, not the person in the salt mines enacting the plan.
Yeah. Well, and you read all of Solzhenitsyn's work, and you see that it all leads in that direction. You know, I wrote an article years ago called Political Science is a Death Cult. And what I was basically saying is that how many of you or your audience have ever been in a political science class, community college, four-year college, whatever the case may be, in which your professor could say a word if it didn't involve his rationalization of the use of force against his fellow man?
Or his rationalization for selling his books that only sell 30 copies a semester worldwide because he assigns them.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I'm almost 50, and you know, I went to a private school, but it was basically run like a government school. You know, we all sat in little rows. It was the model of the government school, but we had slightly better teachers, and we had teachers that assigned 1984. And when I went to college, community college, you know, which is like high school with ashtrays, they basically they assign things like Solzhenitsyn, and you know, they taught logic, and they don't do that in government schools anymore. I don't think most people in government schools could pronounce Solzhenitsyn, let alone know who he is or why they should read him or have heard of anyone who's read him.
Michael, you're right, but that's also because the teachers are incapable of teaching it.
Yeah, and they probably take him out of the same pool they get the TSA people from. We'll be back with the final segment on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buperch from ZeroGov.com and Nima Vidati from the Freedom Fiends. Worms. Say worms.
Worms.
Worms. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Worms. Thank you for sticking with us on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Show. That's Michael making his cat guitar feedback noises. I'm Nima Vidati out here in the Texas Hill Country. And we've got Bill Buperch on the line in the oven that is – well, I guess I won't say it. But he's somewhere else that's probably nice and warm right now. Now, Bill, with all the talk that we've done so far about Ukraine, I guess it's important to point out that this isn't the only
– Aircat 1.
It's not the only hotspot in the world that we could see some kind of black swan that could affect the whole world. What else is going on, and what does it mean
for people?
Well, of
course, the Middle East is jumping, as everybody knows. The Horn of Africa is jumping. Venezuela is having a huge upheaval that has some analogs to what's going on with the Ukraine. But we look at all these, and we think to ourselves, well, what's really going on? I don't really know what the future holds. But I think there's, Nima, as you're fond of saying, and I am too, there's lots of black swans, unintended consequences, and unextrapolated second and third order effects that are going to come out of this whole thing. We don't know where we're going to be in a year or in 5 years. If you and I were living in 1912, right here, right now, we would have no visual or anticipation whatsoever of what the world would look like in 1918. And the world in 6 years looked completely different from what it was in 1912.
They didn't have
to 1918.
They didn't have Twitter, and I'm not just joking about that. That makes a difference.
So the only thing we can predict is complete unpredictability.
Of course, you know what? We're Austrians, aren't we? Don't we believe that subjectivist utility and subjectivist methodology is such that as human beings, we are blessed with imperfect information and nothing else. With imperfect information, we make the best choices we can at our small level. And we know that the larger the organization, the more wrong and the more wrongheaded they're going to be in their behaviors and the effects it has on our future.
So will that point come through? Could that be the silver lining? All of these massive blunders that we see going on with the old ways of organizing society, could the silver lining be that helps to drive the point home even more so? That decentralized methods of organizing things like Bitcoin and the blockchain are going to emerge in the popular mind as the way forward?
You know, I don't think so, because I think that as libertarians, ANCAPs, minarchists, whatever you want to call this small coterie of guys and gals that we are, we're a very small percentage of the population, and I think that it's going to remain that way for a long time. Now, can we magically click our heels and find 100 years from now everybody looks back and says, "What were they thinking by allowing government to do the things that it did?" That's possible, but I don't have a crystal ball in which I can say that in 6 years' time everybody's going to come out of their intellectual drunkenness and say, "You know what? Government is bad for your health. The state is bad for your health. And delivering goods and services at the point of a gun is not only immoral and not virtuous, but it's ineffective." But we're a ways from there.
Okay. But you still say, you obviously seem like a happy guy. You enjoy your life. What do you do to keep yourself sane with that kind of worldview?
Well, I read and I shoot and I look for expat locations.
And Michael tortures cats.
I'm not torturing. I just picked Charlie up to take some pictures. Oh, there's the train. There's the cats. Yeah, we're in our homes, man. This is a real independent radio.
Hey, you know what, Nima? If you're asking, is there room for optimism? There's always room for optimism, because remember, from the position that we sit at, if the state is smashed or the state smashes itself, we all win.
Well, unless it rebuilds itself.
Yeah,
and it becomes like a Mickey Mouse Fantasia thing.
And we do not want to smash it with, you know, the way the hippies in the 60s with guns said. We don't want to fight it on its terms. We want to intellectually fight it. What do you think of that, Bill?
Well, sure. I'm pointing my finger at my head and saying the revolution begins here. And you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By reducing the demand for it, by reducing the demand for its so-called services. And it'll fight that. I mean, there are politicians trying to outlaw Bitcoin now, as if you could do that. The cat is so far out of the bag. Meow.
It's impossible. It can't be outlawed, because you can't outlaw a software product, because it will find a way. Just like Jeff Goldblum tells us in Jurassic Park. Life will find a way. And I would tell you that freedom finds a way, because we all practice anarchy in our everyday lives, even though the collectivists won't acknowledge that, but they do at their dining room table every evening, every time we're there with friends, every time they're with family, and every time they go to a store and purchase something. They are acting in an anarchic fashion.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Bill Buford. Thank you so much, MWD. Thank you so much,
Worms.
Freedom Fiends. We'll
Worms.
Be back next
Thanks,
weekend.
Guys. It was great to be on.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.